What I meant to say was Happy Thanksgiving. It's not in my notes. It says Happy Thanksgiving right there. I trust that everyone's like all topped up on pumpkin spice everything, like, so we can move along now to what? Halloween, right? So that's next, right? Eggnog. Oh, no, that's wrong. Okay, Halloween first, right? Halloween's important. I have spoken up in this setting in vigorous support of Halloween in the past, in particular in support of the curious cultural habit that we have of going door to door at Halloween, which and having our houses open to one another, which strikes me as being a lot more like Christmas than Christmas usually is, right? And that's when we lock everybody else out and we're just going to huddle, but not at Halloween. And so that's kind of an interesting thing. And it's also a time where, at least in the houses where I've hung out with our kids as part of this and the neighborhoods where we've gone door to door, it tends to be a remarkably not judgmental cultural experience as well. It takes a pretty strange thing to come to the door before you would say anything more dramatic than, "Oh, that's creative." You know, like we just kind of, whatever. That's really interesting to me. I find that easy to affirm. And although I still think that the way we offer that kind of curious moment of hospitality to others at Halloween is intriguing, I'm starting to wonder if we need the rest of it. I'm starting to wonder if we need the bizarre and the bloody and the what is that anyway parts. And the reason that I'm starting to wonder that this week in particular is because of Vegas. I find myself wondering just how egregiously distorted our prevailing culture needs to become before we look around and we say, I don't think we need to set aside a special date for Halloween because the strange, the surreal, the violent, the twisted, they're happening in the street. They're happening right over there. Does that strike you as just a little too dark for Thanksgiving Sunday? You ever wish you had a pastor that was a little more sunshine and light? You know? Yeah, me too. But listen, if we can't talk about the world that we live in when we gather like this, like, why get out of bed? Honestly, who needs a religious experience that offers an hour and a half where we can ignore reality? Like, if you want to do that, watch a romantic comedy or cartoons. Do kids still do that? Is that still a thing? Is there still? Okay, I don't know. We live in the country. We don't actually have television. I'm going somewhere with this, so don't leave. This is Thanksgiving weekend, and it's been a hell of a couple of weeks out there, right? So today, there are another bunch of families that are reeling from unexpected and violent loss. There's a couple of more cities in which the citizens are more stressed and jumpy than they were a few days ago. I know this happens every day, but it doesn't always happen just down the cultural block from us or, you know, the next city over. And one of the ways I can sense that here in Winnipeg is that the local channel of our national broadcaster had a call-in show a couple days after the Vegas shootings, and the topic was asking people how they're coping with the news. I didn't catch all of that show, but the bit that I caught was dominated by folks basically phoning in to say, I'm stressed, and I'm not coping well, and I'm struggling to understand, and I'm trying to make sense out of what has happened and what is happening. And it's Thanksgiving. Now, if you're someone that stands in the Christian tradition or someone that gathers with a community that does, you might find yourself encountering a particular biblical text on this weekend. It's from one of the letters that the Bible has in its collection. It's written by a caring pastor-type person to a faith community that they started and that they care about. It's worth noting that this particular community to whom the letter is addressed started out under kind of difficult circumstances. The Apostle Paul, the most likely author of this text, showed up in Jewish communities with the message of Jesus, and when he did that, this guy must have pissed so many people off. When he did that, things tended to go a little bit sideways, because what he'd do is he'd go to the synagogue, okay, and then in this particular town, for 3 weeks, just say, I know you thought you had this, but I've got this other way of looking at things. And he would just pound away at it. And out of these encounters in that particular religious community would come people for whom that other way of looking at the story was resonant, and these new faith communities would start. And so these new faith communities were this interesting mix. Now, what Paul had to say had a couple of particular elements to it that were rather radical and disruptive. One of them was the notion that the Jewish religion did not have a lock on who God was. If you've ever been part of any religious tradition that thought it had a lock on who God was, and somebody came along and said, you don't, then you have some sense of what that sensation might be. So that was part of the message that Paul was bringing with him. And another part of that message that was disruptive was that God's grace, God's goodness was for everyone. And that was an extremely disruptive idea. And when you say it fast like that, it's like, well, that's lovely. Except if you're already part of a group of people for whom the idea that God's goodness is uniquely for you and everybody else is outside of that experience, and then somebody comes along and says, no, actually, this is for everyone. What does that do to the outside-inside dynamic? Well, in the short version, it makes the outsiders insiders. Anybody you don't want to be an insider with? Just think about that sensation. That's what happens in these communities. And so things go a little bonkers. And so in this particular little fledgling faith community, which now is comprised of Jews and Gentiles, unheard of, and has a bunch of women in leadership, also unheard of, things are kind of under duress right from go. And this particular duress in this certain story had some unpleasant forms, not the least of which, and this is really intriguing, we don't tend to talk about this part of the New Testament stories, but it's in the story, not the least of the ways in which this was an unpleasant experience for people is that the Jewish religious authorities, whose smooth flow of things was getting rather screwed up, were taking people from this new faith community to court. And they were slapping fines on them. They were like finding ways to disrupt their lives legally as an attempt to discredit this new embracing movement. We were kind of joking this morning about, as we were setting up, about unpleasant phone calls, and I said I hadn't really received an unanticipated, deeply disruptive phone call since the last time somebody phoned and threatened to sue me. And true story, which I'm not going to tell, but in any detail. But this, I remember that sensation, and somebody that was helping set up said, well, what did you do? And I said, well, after I got over the feeling like I was going to throw up, I phoned a lawyer friend and so on and so forth. But that's not a pleasant sensation when somebody shows up at your door and says, off to court we go, right? Messes with your life. So this is all going on in this little community. And so the folks in this community are wondering how to proceed because they're wondering how to think about what they believe, and they're wondering why it might be that if people should love one another, which is the core of what got them into this community, then how come they're having such a rough time of it? And so Paul, the author of this letter, because he isn't there at the time, he writes them a letter about all this stuff. And we have that letter in the collection of things that's in the Bible as 1 Thessalonians. Thessalonica is where this church was. And in this letter, under those circumstances, we find Paul addressing people's questions about how to live love under those kinds of circumstances. And there's this verse, and this is the classic. This is the classic Thanksgiving verse that's in that story. This is what it says. It says, rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. The Thanksgiving verse, right there. And just in case you don't use the word rejoice all the time, like in everyday conversation, let me give you a different translation. Be cheerful no matter what. Pray all the time. Thank God no matter what happens. This is the way God wants you, who belong to Christ Jesus, to live. Okay. When I read a verse like that, my first thought is the only kind of Christian I'm ever going to be is a bad one. I deeply dislike binary texts. There is not a hope in Hannah that I could live like that. There is no way. Let's just take it bit by bit. Okay? Cheerful. Okay. Despite my, you know, Eeyore-ish intro this morning, I'm usually at least pleasant, and I don't think it's bizarre for me to be cheerful. But no matter what, like, seriously? And the same thing for thanking God in all circumstances. Like, and as for praying all the time, that's just not going to happen. So, I'm out, right? This, in my experience, it's exactly these kind of all or nothing texts that tend to provoke a response in people that's just like either dismissive, like that's ridiculous, or despair, like I can't do it. And neither of those are particularly helpful when it comes to how we're going to live. But this is the kind of text that would make me throw up my hands and walk away. Because honestly, if I meet someone that's cheerful all the time, I'm inclined to question either their grasp on reality or their capacity for empathy or their willingness to be honest with themselves. There is something inside of me, if I meet somebody who's unremittingly cheerful, that just screams, get real. Like, I just, maybe that's my problem, but at least a couple of people in the room share it with me. Okay, that's good. It's nice to have company. Now, unless you're like a neo-Luddite or for some other reason you eschew the news, like, honestly, have you talked to your neighbor? Just go for a walk around the block. Like, just, you know? This is not very hard to see why this is difficult. And if that's the Christian picture of Thanksgiving, like, you're going to just have to leave me out. Because I can't do it. I don't even think it's a good idea. A quick word here about cognitive dissonance. I got an email recently from someone in this community in which they pointed out that one of the main reasons that we don't examine what we believe is because even though we may have thought about something that challenges or otherwise disrupts the smooth flow of what we say we believe, we don't want to examine it because examining it causes us philosophical or emotional discomfort. One name for that sensation is cognitive dissonance. And when we get into a situation like that, most of us will do what this person in the email called thinking acrobatics. To try to kind of get around it, right? We don't want to wade into whatever the deep water of that disruptive idea is. So we just find a way. I think about the thousands and thousands of dollars I spent in the classroom listening to well-educated people do this. Anyway, it's not like it wasn't worth something, but when I look back on it from my present vantage point, a lot of it looks like thinking acrobatics. So in my experience, that idea rings really true. And so when I come to a verse that says living in the way of Jesus means that I have to be cheerful no matter what, that I have to thank God no matter what, that I have to pray all the time, my cognitive dissonance meter starts to beep. I know that is not possible. But I am being told that in the spiritual path that I've chosen, that's how I should live. Let the acrobatics begin. You know, where do you go from there, right? Well, the good news in this case is that that particular verse is a rather reasonable instance of hyperbole. And just in case that's another word, like rejoice, that you don't use every day, hyperbole is an extravagant statement or a figure of speech that's not intended to be taken literally, as in, where have you been? I've been waiting for an eternity. Okay? It's something that this particular writer seems a bit inclined to. I suppose it was an important part of his method when you think about the situations he was in. He was a rhetorician, among other things. He could get things fired up. And sometimes that means setting ideas against one another in a way that is meant to provoke. But even if that wasn't the case, I would feel comfortable with that opinion about this text because of the setting for that text. I want to read you what comes right before that rather challenging do this all the time verse, okay? Here's what precedes it. So he's writing to the same community that he just said, be cheerful all the time, be thankful no matter what, pray all the time. And now, friends, we ask you to honor these leaders who work so hard for you, who've been given the responsibility of urging and guiding you along in your obedience. Overwhelm them with appreciation and love. Get along amongst yourselves, each of you doing your part. Our counsel is that you warn the freeloaders to get a move on. a paraphrase to be sure, but nevertheless, an interesting. Gently encourage the stragglers and reach out for the exhausted, pulling them to their feet. Be patient with each person, attentive to individual needs, and be careful that when you get on each other's nerves, you don't snap at each other. Look for the best in each one and always do your best to bring it out. Now, those sound like words of wise counsel for ordinary people to me. Why would I say that? Well, whoever Paul's writing to, they need leadership. I'm in. That sounds pretty normal. And leading them could be hard work. They need to be urged and guided. Okay. And these leaders, they don't sound like super people either. They need to be shown appreciation and love. Apparently, they have needs. And these folks in this community apparently always don't get along with one another. They don't always pull their own weight. Sometimes they take when they should be giving, and sometimes they don't keep up, and sometimes they get exhausted, and they fall down, and somebody needs to help them back up. Anybody recognize themselves in this story yet? Oh, yeah, and they run out of patience. Maybe they run out of patience when the circumstances are difficult. Maybe when the evening news has them feeling stressed and jittery about going out to work to work tomorrow. That's when they shoot from the hip. Oh yeah, and they have unique individual needs. And apparently, sometimes they let them show. And sometimes when they do that, it grates on other people, and sometimes those people snap, and then they need to be reminded to look out for one another and to do that empathetic work of seeing the sometimes hidden goodness in the other person and bringing it out where other people can see it. See, now this is starting to sound like a community that I could live, no insult intended. This is starting to sound like the community I do live in. Right? What does all this have to do with Thanksgiving? Well, I gave Augustine a pretty rough time a few weeks ago about a mistranslation of a particular biblical verse in Romans that has had us collectively struggling in Christendom with the idea of original sin ever since. It's a lot of freight for one historic figure to haul. So, in a kinder light, Augustine, writing in the 4th century, wrote this: "The times are bad." Apparently this isn't new. "The times are troublesome." This is what humans say. "But we are our times. Let us live well, and our times will be good. Such as we are, such are our times." Now, that sounds to me like it holds together in tension both an ideal and a reality. And the ideal is that no matter how bad my world is rocking, no matter how bad or troublesome the times appear to be, I can choose to recall that all of it, the glorious and the mundane, the heroic and the tragic, the stressful and the restful, everything in between, all of that is happening within the divine. And my personal faith reminds me that even when my limitations are showing up loud and clear, God has not gone away. Nor, my faith would say to me, nor ceased to be good. And even in those moments or seasons, maybe especially in those moments or seasons, I am, we are, surrounded by God. These experiences happen within God. More about that another time. But with that in mind, I think it's possible to practice not just the attitude of thankfulness, but the actions that bring it to life. Because the actions that bring it to life are pretty ordinary. Doesn't mean they're easy, but they're not inaccessible like be cheerful all the time is inaccessible. Because the actions that bring thankfulness to life are things we can practice. They're things like doing the sometimes hard work of urging one another on when it's tough. There's things like offering whatever wisdom we've accrued along the way to people who seek it. Did I mention that? It's an important feature of offering wisdom. Things like showing appreciation and love to other people and receiving it when it's offered, because sometimes that's really difficult to do, right? So we can practice. We can do ordinary things like acknowledge it when we don't do our part at work or at home or in a relationship, and we can try again. And we can know that we're normal when we don't keep up, when we collapse in a heap, when we need help or we see someone else that needs us to help them. These are the things that I called the acts of thanksgiving in the blurb. This is what I was trying to gesture toward, and they're ordinary, everyday ways that we can bring thanksgiving to life. To put it another way, these are things that we can, to use the words of Augustine, these are ways that we can live well, even when we feel like we are surrounded by the times are bad. And if there is some merit to Augustine's thought that such as we are, such are our times, then for my part, at least, I would like to continue to try to do what I can to make my times ones of thanksgiving, ones where at least sometimes I'm able to pick up my head and look around me and see that I am also with others that are doing their best to do the same, even when it doesn't come out looking like always cheerful, always thankful, praying all the time.